It's 8:11 and it's President's Day.
Yes.
So Jason Cook said, would you like to have the president here on President's Day? So we made that deal. So we have Dr. R. Bowen Lofton here this morning. Good morning. How are you, doctor?
Good morning, sir. I'm just fine.
Okay, so it's President's Day. I thought the best thing to do is go ahead and ask you some presidential trivia questions and see how we did on this. There'll be multiple choice.
But Jason's here to help you now.
Okay, that's fine. He can do that. All right, the first president to be born in a hospital, was it Jimmy Carter or John F. Kennedy?
Oh, certainly Kennedy.
Jimmy Carter.
Really?
0-1.
Interesting.
Sorry. We're not playing for prizes, so it doesn't matter.
I bet he won't say certainly anymore.
Who was the first president whose mother lived at the White House with him? Was it James Garfield or Abraham Lincoln?
I'll guess Garfield.
All right, there we go. All right, there we are.
So I'm guessing Mr. Garfield's wife was a real peach if she brought mom with her.
Yeah.
Who's in the wagon? Oh, that's mom.
Okay. Oh, great.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, anyway, we thank you for taking time to be with us this morning. One of the first things we like to do is kind of find a way for people to connect with an individual who they may not have gotten a chance to talk to. So where'd you go to high school?
Navasota High School.
Well, there you go. We got a Rattler here.
Go Rattlers, yes.
Friday nights at Brule Field?
I spent many a night there. On the field and off, sir.
Okay, what did you play? Yeah, what sports did you play?
I was a right guard.
Okay.
Way, way back when in junior high school.
Okay. So, now, did they have a junior-senior or was it just a senior prom?
We had a junior-senior prom both, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What color tux did you wear?
Boy, that's trivia from a long time ago.
Yeah,
I can't remember which one it was. One was a blue pastel.
Oh, okay.
This was the 60s. Okay,
oh, I understand. So that's why we're talking about it. That's why we're talking about it. Exactly. Yeah. First car?
First car that I owned myself totally was a Buick.
Okay.
Buick Skylark.
Oh, okay.
1970.
Model. Okay. Do you still have folks in Navasota?
Not very close anymore. Both my parents are gone, and I was only a child.
Okay.
So no immediate family left, but some cousins.
Okay, yeah. Do you carry a wireless device that produces music?
I have an iPhone in my pocket right now.
Okay. Do you got music on it?
Yes.
Who's your two favorite artists?
Well, there's quite a few on there. I do like the Supremes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a number of songs on there. That's probably my number one count, probably, among all the ones I have on there. And Roy Orbison, I got some of his songs.
What was the last movie you saw?
I saw the True Grit recently, the remake of that.
Like it better than the original? Or
John Wayne's hard to beat, sir.
Yeah, he really is. What was the last book you read, or what are you reading right now?
I'm reading a book which is a biography of several general officers who all attained the rank of 5 stars.
I got you.
Dwight Eisenhower, for example, MacArthur, people like that. Right.
How'd this bow tie thing start?
You want the truth?
Yeah, that's what I'd just like to know. Yeah.
Years and years ago, I was a young professor teaching physics at a university I won't name. And an edict came down one day from the president of the university that said all profs should wear ties when they teach. And most of us dressed with slacks and open collar shirts at that time. And so I said, I'm going to show him. I'll wear a bow tie. So my act of rebellion is what started this process. And I realized after a while a couple of things. First of all, the bow tie didn't get soup on it.
True.
And secondly, people remember me very well. Both the fact it's fairly unusual tie to wear here in Texas. And secondly, my name, my given name I go by is Bowen. So meet somebody, they remember your name probably, and as I began more into marketing myself and my programs and such, it was actually a very handy thing to have.
And it probably solves the gift-giving problem for a whole lot of people, right?
I get 3 or 4 a month.
Yeah. Now, on specific days, special days within your life and career, did you choose to wear the same tie over and over again?
I've got a pretty good-sized collection. The tie I've been wearing the most lately to athletic events has been one that Eleanor Green, our vet dean, gave me a while back. It's a maroon and white striped tie. We won 4 games last fall when I wore it. So
okay.
I said, this is a good tie
to
wear.
Yeah, that works.
But I have about 300 ties.
Wow.
And probably about 80 of them have ruined them, so I rotate around my ties pretty often.
Dr. R. Bowen Lofton, the president of A&M, with us this morning. You and UT officials had this They called it Orange and Maroon Week. Let's call it Maroon and Orange Week over here. But an opportunity to go over and talk to elected officials, kind of marching in lockstep. I'd like to get your thoughts about that.
That was last Tuesday, Orange Maroon Day, actually. That was last Tuesday. It's a event started by the Texas Exes and our Association of Former Students to not simply bring people like me who do this all the time. And when I come there, knock on the door, I know why I'm there. But this was a matter of bringing to the Capitol former students of both institutions who walk the halls in teams together, and they just tell the story of Texas A&M and UT Austin. And it's very effective. We saw every member's office over the course of the day, usually teams of about four people each, a couple Longhorns, a couple Aggies, coming together, and we were just telling the same thing about both schools. We're pretty special schools, and here's what we do together. And that's something that Bill Powers and I have done for the last several months, is walk around the state together and talk about what we do as two flagship institutions, not as what A&M or as what UT does, but what we do together. That's a good message.
In a letter to university officials a couple of weeks ago, the governor has asked for programs that would cost $10,000 to get a kid out of college. Is this something that you knew was coming? I went out and looked. The last time you could get a $10,000 diploma from Texas A&M was 1996. And so do we end up with no frills, dual credit? Can this really actually be accomplished?
Well, I was asked that question in my testimony last week before the House Appropriations Committee, Subcommittee on Education, and I said, I don't know how to do that right yet. I'm not saying it can't be done, but our cost is probably between $35,000 and $36,000 right now for a four-year degree at Texas A&M, looking at tuition fees and books. And books alone can be several thousand dollars. So we're looking at a cost of a degree being $10,000, you take away the books, you're talking about maybe $5,000 or $6,000 left over for paying for all the infrastructure and faculty the university provides. I'm not sure how you do that. As a marker, I called Blinn College. I said, what does it cost to get a two-year degree at Blinn, books, tuition fees? Answer was over $8,000. So it gives you a marker right there. Even a four-year or a two-year community college, which has lower costs than we have, certainly, given how they operate and how they're structured, they give a two-year degree for almost $10,000. So how do we get that back? I don't know how to do that. And our chancellor said the same thing, actually.
Is there an unserved group that you think the governor's trying to reach here? Are there actually kiddos who want to or should be capable to go to college, and it's merely the price of the diploma that's keeping them from being served?
Well, our goal at Texas A&M is very clear. We want to have everyone who is qualified to enter our university graduate to come here if they can. And that is, in some cases, a financial problem. And so we give out every year about $500 million of financial aid between grants, scholarships, work-study, loans, the whole nine yards. And so we do a lot to provide students with what they need to actually afford to have a college education.
Now, you have a percentage of the tuition that's basically set back for that. Is that right?
There's two kinds of tuition. The tuition that the university itself levies per our Board of Regents, state law requires us to set aside 20% for need-based financial support.
On the other side of that scale, now, are you going to have some flexibility with that? Because I'd understood that y'all might be able to change that percentage as need be, as time starts to get tight.
There's discussion in Austin right now about eliminating that particular requirement. But if that were to even happen, we couldn't quickly make any changes. I mean, again, people depend on financial support from us to come here. And so I wouldn't see us very quickly shifting that funding from where it's going for financial aid right now, it's need-based, into other operational requirements, at least initially.
Dr. Bowen Lofton, the president of A&M, joining us this morning. Our legislature's got a rainy day fund so that if things don't go as planned, they've got a little bit of reserve set back. Is it realistic to think that universities, state universities, should do this same thing? If times get bad, then there's something that you can draw on? Because you are a victim of an economy in Texas that is not as healthy as it has been in the past.
I think all universities certainly have reserves. We have some at Texas A&M. If you talk to any accountant, they will tell you that any entity should have at least one quarter of its yearly requirements for expenses set aside as reserves. We have less than that right now at Texas A&M. And that's a function, really, of trying to make it all work. Our tuition increases lately have been pretty modest, and costs continue to rise. And so we have to really struggle to make sure that we keep our costs as low as possible. We've done a lot in the last several months to make that happen. I have four or less vice presidents today than I had when I started my job. So the initial overhead has gone way down at Texas A&M over the last several months. And we look at other places around the university, too, to try to be able to do more with less.
What do you say to that staff who says, do I get a raise this year?
We don't know yet. It'll depend on what happens in Austin, but it doesn't look good.
Interim Provost Karen Watson, in an interview with the Eagle, or was quoted in the Eagle over the weekend, that she believed she was 90% sure she would not be named the next provost. We've had the finalists for about a month, and my understanding is you have no timetable as to when you are going to make a recommendation to the board. Is that correct?
Well, let's be clear on what's going on here. This is pure speculation. 1 week ago today, I met with the chairs of the search committee to get from them their analysis of the feedback received across the campus community as a result of the interviews we had of two finalists. So I've only had in my hands 1 week the results of those analyses done by that committee. I was gone 4 days last week. So I've had very little time to be able to do other contacts I wanted to make within and outside the community to be able to get the feedback required to make a good decision. So I'm not at the point yet of making a decision. I hope to be very close soon, but I'm not there yet. And I think we're really expecting a great deal to give me really one working day after I meet with the search committee chairs to get their final report to me to make a decision. That's just a little bit extreme, I think.
Are you is there a possibility that the search could be abandoned and you start the process over again?
That's always possible. It's not a desirable outcome, though.
Would you imagine that the same people who had applied before would come back if that were to happen? In other words, because I guess you had, fair to say, over 100 people who were interested.
Well, over 100, yeah. Yes. Hypothetically, it would be, I think, a mistake to believe you could get many of those people to consider being reexamined again, having not gone through the process in a successful way the first time.
You've got 46,500 students. Massive
Actually,
number,
more
right?
Than that.
Okay, but pretty close. Okay. It's about 80%, 20% undergrad and grad. Is that about right?
That's about right. It's about 40,000 undergraduates as in the fall semester and about 10,000 graduates.
Is that where you want to be, or do you want that number to be different?
I think our total population is roughly where it needs to be. We'd have to invest a great deal in infrastructure, Texas A&M, to grow significantly beyond where we are right now. We've been keeping our freshman admits constant now for several years. But that started about 5 years ago, and so we've seen growth every year because we started off with fewer freshman admits at that time. And so we are probably approaching some level of stability right now. But given the uncertainty economically we have to kind of see how things settle out, I believe. I did have a task force work last year on enrollment management recommendations. That's on the web. You can look at it for yourself. They recommended basically that we stay roughly where we are right now. Perhaps focus more attention on transfer students at the junior level coming in. There's no doubt that we are more expensive than a community college might be, and so there's no reason we can't see additional students perhaps going for 2 years elsewhere and then coming here as transfer students as juniors.
Explain why a school wants to have more graduate students. Just kind of give us a primer on that.
Well, there are several reasons. Graduate students, first of all, are necessary for a number of reasons. Industry needs them. A lot of our engineering graduates here are going to be feeding industry what they need in terms of innovative capabilities. So that's a very important demand for us. Industry hires both baccalaureate students, they hire master's level students, they hire also doctoral students from here. We also have to renew the faculty. Faculty's age over time. We need to renew those as well. While they're here, they form an essential part of our infrastructure as well. They assist faculty in teaching oftentimes. They may grade papers. They may assist them in laboratory sessions, things like that. They also do research. Their research can be truly innovative and cutting edge, and the research enterprise here is extraordinarily productive at Texas A&M. That feeds back into our economy. Every dollar the state invests in us returns $18 of economic activity here in Texas. That's a big deal.
You're asked to talk about the high points of this university all over the state. So
if we give you the microphone here for a minute and a half to tell us what's great about Texas A&M that people in Bryan College Station might not know and realize, what would that be?
First of all, we're extraordinarily effective at what we do. We produce great graduates. The Wall Street Journal last September did a survey of over almost 500 major companies in America saying, where do you want to hire graduates from the most? We were number two in the nation. Not bad. Two Texas schools were named, by the way. Texas Tech was number 19. That was it.
Yeah. Well, and again, if we're supposed to make a marketable person when they come out of college, it sounds like they'll have...
When these recruiters were asked why they picked A&M, they said, because our graduates are the best prepared into the workforce and be effective immediately. That's number one. We're very effective at what we do. Number two, we're very efficient. Our administrative costs are 4% of our total budget. That's the best in Texas. The average is over 10.3 across all universities. So we're very, very good at the dollar here at Texas A&M in terms of administration. And finally, we have high impact. Again, I just mentioned a moment ago, the research we do here is truly, truly economic, economically valuable to the state of Texas and the nation as a whole. If you look at our research expenditures here at Texas A&M, we're at $630 million in fiscal 09. That's over a year ago. That makes us number three in the nation among universities without medical schools. MIT is first, Berkeley second, we're third, okay? And we're giving Berkeley a run for the money, too.
Good.
And so we are really productive in doing our research here. And this research is not esoteric research. It's research that translates very quickly into applications that really, again, help people build businesses, create jobs, and make our lives better.
If people saw buses and stretch limos over the weekend, it was because of this Aggieland Saturday event. Pretty amazing thing. Kind of give us an overview from your point of view.
We had thousands of high school students on campus looking at us. This current year here had 30,000 applications for our freshman class, and we try to make sure that people around the state of Texas see what a great place we have here at Texas A&M. Visiting the campus is very critical. They not only see the campus itself, but they also meet our current students. The people who run this are not me. It's run by our current students. And they're the best salespeople I have.
Utah legislature has done a couple of interesting things here in the last week. They have, first of all, been looking at the subject of tenure for professors and if that system needs to be changed. I'd like to get your view of what you think the future of tenure is.
Tenure has been around a long time, over 1,000 years by some measures anyway. The problem with tenure is not so much that it's a bad thing or a good thing. It's a reality. If one state chooses not to do it, that's going to make them far less competitive at attracting and retaining the best faculty. If the entire world changed their attitude about it, it might be very different. But I'll remind you that we are not simply saying tenure is a guarantee of life employment. We do routine post-tenure reviews on all faculty, including me. And the idea being that we want to make certain anybody, tenured or not, is productive, that they are high quality in their teaching, and other activities they may carry out on behalf of the university. So it's not a matter of getting past some threshold where you can stop. We insist you continue. Tenure is simply going to protect you from unwarranted insecurity in your job based on your expressing perhaps viewpoints that are unpopular. That's where it started from, basically. It's not meant to protect you if you don't do your job, and it does not.
Our news this morning, we are reporting and following in step with what the Utah legislature is considering, that individuals with concealed carry permits, both employees and students, would be able to carry handguns on Texas campuses. Your thoughts?
Well, we'll certainly follow state law. Current law says they can't. If the law has changed, we'll certainly deal with that. But I'll remind you of one thing. Our law enforcement personnel on campus right now are trained to react to threats and to violent acts. My fear is, how will they tell the good guys from the bad guys? Think about that a moment. That's my only concern. How do you really discern in the heat of some kind of gun battle that one person is actually a law-abiding citizen trying to help and someone else is a bad guy trying to hurt? How do you make that decision, particularly in a split second, if you are a law enforcement person here charged with defending this property and these people here at Texas A&M? I worry about that. Putting our people who are police, local campus police here in that position is very, very difficult, I think. And we have to think very carefully what that means to them. But again, we'll do whatever state law says. That's what we have to do.
Are there two or three presidents who you talk to on a regular basis?
You mean former and presidents? Or
no, that's two. But what I was thinking is sitting presidents at other universities.
Certainly. I'm part of organizations that involve college presidents countrywide, and so we get together every so often, talk a lot. I talk a great deal of Bill Powers at UT Austin for obvious reasons. We are more alike than we're different, obviously. We talk a lot within the Big 12. The 10 presidents making up the current Big 12 meet regularly and talk about not just athletic events but also other things as well, because we are in the same kind of job. And there's few people you can talk to that really understand your job as well as they do.
Obviously, we hear about the NCAA and athletic directors do all they want, but it's the presidents who pass the legislation. Any legislation in the upcoming year for the NCAA that's on your radar screen of importance?
Well, there's always a lot going on. There are issues in college basketball right now we look at carefully. My AD and I talk about it quite often. A person I trust a great deal is Tom Adair. Tom's a member of faculty who's been our faculty academic representative for a very long time here at Texas A&M. I'm a senior in the nation, in fact, and so I really respect Tom Adair's viewpoints here. So I listen to both those people about this. Again, the NCAA is a bureaucracy. It's grown a lot over the years. I think the current president's trying to shrink it a bit. We'll see if he can succeed in that. I wish him very much good luck in making that happen. But we don't view this as the enemy. It's just really a governing structure we have to live within. It's meant to make it fair. And we watch carefully how this develops, and we'll be making our inputs known appropriately as we go forward.
What's A&M going to look like in 20 years?
Well, I think it'll be more diverse than it is now. We are about two-thirds white and about one-third minority. That will change over time because the state's changing right now. That will definitely happen right now. There'll be a few more buildings, although we're trying to shift now from mostly new construction to some real focus on rehabilitation of our current structures here on campus. So the two things you'll see most obviously there. I think, again, A&M is on a trajectory which will take it even further than how it's already gone and towards being recognized as one of the truly great universities in America. We're really very, very good at what we do here, and others are recognizing that every day.
R. Bowen Lofton is the 24th president of Texas A&M. He's been our guest this morning. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time.
You're most welcome.